Hi, I'm Aaron Feldman, director of Poop Talk, and I'm talking with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Oh, shalom, my friends. This is your old buddy, Rabbi Saul Solomon, founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And today, I want to talk shit with someone. No, not in a colloquial way. I mean quite literally shit, poop, caca, doo-doo, scheisse, all the things that I love because I have trouble doing them. And we're going to be talking about this with a director, a film director named Aaron Feldman, who has made a movie called Poop Talk. And it's all these comedians and personalities, folks like Adam Carolla and Paul Provenza and some other Italian people and Rob Corddry, the Sklar Brothers, lots of folks talking about shitting. I could not be happier than to talk right now to Aaron Feldman. Shalom to you.
Shalom. Thank you for having me.
Oh, what a delight. What a joy. So I've seen your movie. It is so much fun with all these comedians talking about their real poop stories and connection to poo. What is yours?
I grew up in a household. The origin of the film came with, I have a younger brother, his name is Jordan. He's 4 years younger than me. We grew up in the same household, in the same ways, and we have diametrically opposite views on poop. We grew up about it. I'm like a squirrel. You wouldn't know. I don't talk about it. And he's the opposite. I'm sure he's going to love me saying this.
But wait a minute. Let me ask you right there. Let me stop you right there. Did he ever do the Jewish male thing of coming out of the bathroom, not flushing, because he wants to run to you, to the parents, and go, oh my God, look what I just did. It's the biggest, most beautiful one ever. No one has ever matched it. Did he do that?
I don't remember it. Maybe
did you?
Younger, I'm sure. That was not me.
Oh, well, or your brother, I'm saying. He never, yeah.
I had a problem. I never would go to the bathroom in public space, the whole thing.
Wow.
So the kernel of this was to explore that. This idea, I thought that comedians were the greatest sort of anthropologists to talk about this subject. I mean, we all do it, but we don't talk about it, or I didn't.
But this is what I don't understand. You were raised by the same parents and the same culture.
Mm-hmm.
So you would figure both of you would either have shit shame, or you would both be like, oh, let's throw our feces against the wall for fun. And yet, diametrically opposed. Why do you think you had that personal, like, oi, I need 4 stalls, and nobody can be in the room while I'm doing it, and I need the pooperita spray? Why?
Well, without going into 4 years of psychoanalysis, I think that we were just different people. Maybe, and what I found when we were talking to all of these different comedians and people, that it really is a 50-50. That people are like that. People are either want nothing to do with talking and hate it, or want to talk about it.
Well, now that you've made this movie, which is a documentary, it's a talking head kind of thing. It's not really a biological treatise about poo. It's comedians joking about it or telling their awful poop stories. But now that you have done the movie, have your feelings changed about it? Do you now just drop your pants in public and shit on the LARR?
It actually is. Without getting so personal, but it's everyone's telling me their poop story, so it's definitely been the top of a conversation. It's more than I've ever talked about it in my life in the last year and a half.
Well, let me ask you then about the making a film. It could have been about any subject, but in this case it happens to be about poo. But the logistics of directing a 70-something minute movie, how long did it take you? How was your budgeting? And so forth.
So I pitched this. I had a friend here in Chicago, and she wanted to do a film, and I pitched this idea. I knew my buddies are the Sklar Brothers. We actually went to Camp Ramah together when we were 13. And
is that a Jewish day camp kind of a thing?
It was a Jewish overnight camp in Wisconsin. Conover, Wisconsin. they've been in the business for, I don't know, 20 years, so they know everyone, and went to them and said, hey, do you think we can do this idea? And they wanted to, you know, they came back with some ideas about how to construct it, and then raised the money. The Edelsons, who backed everything, Sammy, my partner, Sammy Edelson.
Are we talking business partner or stripping in the tushy partner?
What? No. my producing partner.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, for some reason they said yes to the crazy idea, and we managed to put it all together, and it was a really friendly shoot. It was all of our friends. We weren't making the Sistine Chapel. We were doing something fun. Through the conversations, I know the Sklars say that they got to know their friends a lot better.
Oh, well, yeah.
in multiple ways. They really enjoyed it, you know, doing it. And
what was the, because it seems like a fairly simple thing. It's like line up a bunch of people, have them sit in a nightclub, a cabaret, a comedy club, and film them for an hour, and then cut, you know, and use 3 minutes of that footage. But to do all that with all those different people, what, even before you got to the editing stage, what was the budget?
The budget was micro budget. I mean, we were just doing what was needed. So,
and their own equipment, you didn't have to rent any cameras or lighting or anything like that?
We you know, we did when necessary, but not really. No, I mean, everything, this was a pure, like, passion. Everyone was excited to do it. All the people, all the comedians were happy. You know, we had some great scientists who wanted to talk about it, and everyone was very enthusiastic. So everyone gave their time and energy, and we put it together with love.
And did you do the editing, like at home on a PC, or did you go in an editor house, or what did you do?
Yeah, no, my house in LA was our ground central, and we produced everything out of there and edited out of the home, and
wow.
Edited with Brian Marzan, who's a great editor, and the two of us just did it. I mean, it was all truly independent.
And the movie made it to the Toronto Film Festival, no?
So we sold at the Toronto Film Festival. We didn't actually play at the Toronto Film Festival. It was a really long process.
Oh, wow.
From the time we actually finished the getting all the interviews and doing the film, which took about a year, it took me a while to get it to an agent at WME.
Willie Morris, yeah.
Yeah, and then they, you know, by sheer luck, and well, they liked the film, and they decided they took it on. Then we had a sales partner, and then took a long time to find a distribution partner. But that was just the way it worked.
Well, will it be getting theatrical release, or is it straight to Netflix or DVDs or stuff like that?
So it's a theatrical release in 10 cities, and in Canada. I think we're in Toronto on the 16th of February, and we'll be same day video on demand. So we'll be on iTunes and VOD, you know, on your cable.
So we're here in Colorado. If somebody wanted to watch your movie on that, what was it, February 16th, you said?
Yeah.
You should have done it on the 14th, Valentine's Day. What a perfect day. What a couple's movie this would be.
Great date movie.
You would learn so much about the person sitting next to you on the couch, and then you would sort of look on the couch cushion when they got up, just in case. But, you know, so February 16th, people could go on iTunes and video on demand and other places, right?
Yeah, yes, on your television, on your cable, or Xfinity, any of the major distributors.
Now, have you...
And Amazon and Google, and you'll find it anywhere.
Can I ask, I'm assuming also that you are at some point planning a DVD release. Is there stuff on the cutting room floor that you can't wait to put in, sort of as a bonus extra thingy? What?
We had extra interviews with amazing people, and we just ran out of time and couldn't put it in the movie, so that will be in the DVD.
Like, what kind of, with whom? Like, who else?
So, well, more like the extended footage.
All of the same people, of folks like Aisha Tyler and Eric Stonestreet.
There'll be extended footage.
Yeah. Oh, well, tell people, just to give them a little a vorspeise, a little appetizer, some of the stories that are told in the film. It won't stop them from wanting to see the movie itself. But, for example, the Russian woman story.
I mean, she's great. She tells the story about how she's coming out of the... when she immigrated with her parents and she was young, she was 5 years old, that they took a train out of the Ukraine to, I think they were going to Italy or wherever they were going. And she said that while they were going on the train, she had to go to the bathroom. And her mom, and she was Jewish, and so they knew that when the Jews were leaving that time, the Jews were going to leave at that time, so demonstrators came and were yelling at them, yelling at the Jews outside of the train station as they were leaving and boarding the train. And she went to the bathroom. As a little girl, she had to go to the bathroom. She went to the bathroom, and there wasn't any diapers or wet wipes or anything. And her mom, she went to the bathroom in her mom's hand. And as the train was pulling away, her mom didn't know what to do with it. So she rolled down the window and threw it out at the people yelling at them. And that's how she left Mother Russia.
That's the way to conquer anti-Semitism. Throw caca.
I don't do the story justice. I really don't.
Actually, one thing that you don't mention in the film, you show a photograph of these dissidents leaving Russia, getting out of there, and you show the picture of all these people, including the mother and the daughter. Did you notice, maybe it's me or my eyes, but on the right corner of the photo, one of those people is Anatole Sharansky.
Yeah, that's a picture of Anatole, yes.
Was he on that train while the mama was throwing her daughter's shit out the thing?
No, he wasn't.
Oh, so it was not a connected kind of a... Oh, okay. No, oh, well.
No, it was just more of a stock footage.
Oh, that was my oops. Okay. Now, tell a story. One of the stories I was told is about the great wrestler King Kong Bundy.
The Sklars, who actually, they're like me. They have poop shame and never talked about it. They recalled a story where they were in the St. Louis airport, and they saw their favorite wrestler, and I think they must have been teenagers, and they followed him to the bathroom at St. Louis Airport, and sat there and listened to him go to the bathroom, didn't ask him for an autograph, and then just left. And that was like an amazing moment.
Well, wait, did he flush? Did they see his remnants? Did he? Yeah.
They said that the experience lived up to his name.
Oh, indeed. We're talking with Aaron Feldman, the Jew, the director of Poop Talk. By the way, how Jewish are you?
I grew up conservative, and I've been pretty religious.
You grew up that way, but these days, do you go on the High Holy Days? Do you go a little more than that?
I'm Shomer.
No, really?
Yeah.
Whoa! So you wear a yarmulke usually?
I wear a hat, so I'm sort of in between.
That counts.
I'm not yet Orthodox, but working my way up.
So on Shabbos, do you just watch TV? You don't do any work? You don't spend money? How Shomer Shabbos are you?
Trying to just read and turn off, but it's hard to turn off.
Now, did you get any bad or negative feedback from the Jewish community, especially the semi-conservadox Orthodox-ish community, for doing a movie like this?
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, I talked to a rabbi during the research in Israel, and his dad was a plumber, actually. And I wanted to see how the Torah actually did it have anything to say about how to deal with waste. And I'm sorry, I'm not remembering exactly where it's from, but there was one law about in time of war, when you put out a camp, when you go to camp, that every soldier had to have a shovel with them, and they had to go to the bathroom and dig a hole outside the camp. And that's the only time, it's one of the only times it was ever mentioned in the Bible about going to the bathroom.
You know, Judaism is supposed to be a really practical religion, but if I'm a soldier and I'm marching along in God knows, Iraq or North Korea or Afghanistan, I'm going to want a hard tack, I'm going to want a bottle of water, I'm going to want a couple of guns, a shovel, I don't know. I don't think I want to schlep a shovel around just to take a shit cleanly in somebody else's country. I don't know. I'm some issues with what that particular rabbi told you, by the way. And speaking, and this is the thing that floors me also, because you picked a weird topic for this movie. I mean, a topic that I find very funny, and that, by the way, the host of this radio program, Dave Lefkowitz, he actually did a play that involved terrible, horrible pooping. If you ever get to see it, it's called The Miracle of Long Johns. You can watch it on video. It's wonderful. But anywho, a movie you did before this, totally different topic, John Doe, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Well, my background, I have an interesting background.
I guess.
So I've been a screenwriter for 20 years, and I was a political thriller writer and wrote, and then started writing horror movies, and I did this horror movie a while ago and just released it. But it was a first attempt.
Okay, I mean, this is not Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer from 25, 30 years ago. This is a more recent, probably from the early, like late 1990s who did it, right?
2005.
Oh, five, okay, yeah.
Bits and Pieces, you know, again, another independent movie. It was part of the found footage.
That movement of
film.
I know. What was that film that?
But I could tell you. I never want to. I mean, once doing a comedy, I mean, it's such a wonderful world. You laugh all the time. People are fun.
Well, I mean, one of the stars of John Doe, Portrait of a Serial Killer, an actress named Stevie Ryan, killed herself.
Yeah.
Did you have any inkling? Was she
no,
depressed or sad?
Well, it was very sad. It was terrible. She was a sweetheart, and it was really shocking to find out. I found out that she was dealing with depression. But, it's pretty terrible.
I mean, to be honest, most comedians are dealing with some level of depression all the time, and they cover it by being funny,
yeah.
Which is kind of... So who was the most fun off-camera when you were making Poop Talk? Which comedian couldn't turn it off?
You know who I had the most fun? Who was sort of the philosopher of the movie was Pete Holmes. And he had such a great insight into what we tried to do was take a lowbrow subject and approach it in a high, seemingly how.
I mean, it wasn't highbrow. Come on, this was a highbrow.
But meaning the questions we were asking were more about, how do people interact? I mean, it's more taboo than breathing, but we all breathe.
Fair enough.
I'm saying. So it was, I wanted to do something that would be fun and that connected us all and that wasn't political and that sort of brought everyone down to a level like, yeah, we all poop.
Well, yeah, everybody, of course, you know the book, Everybody Poops.
Of course, they know it well.
As read by Patrick Stewart on The Oprah Show, I think, years ago.
He did, yeah.
And of course, that the ultra irony is that he played the voice of poop in the Emoji Movie, unless I'm mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes, he did.
I love the circular stuff in the arts and entertainment. Who needs Picasso when you got poop? That's what I say. You know, you mentioned we talked about the editing before, and you got a fine editor, and you were there helping and stuff. But how many hours of footage did you ultimately have when you stopped doing the interviews, when you had everything?
Yeah, we had ton of footage, let's say 30 minutes of per interview. So I was very organized about it. I after each interview I would transcribe everything, and then I would take all of the interviews and based on the questions that I wanted to ask. And so I know I wanted to have that, you know, have a conversation about what's the difference between in relationships, how do people deal with going to the bathroom in relationships, difference between men and women, you know, what is the reason why we are so averse to the idea of poop. You know, one of the things I found was really interesting is that, you know, in New York, turn of the century, you know, a shipload of human poop.
Shipload, yes.
A shipload, you know, like a container load would sell on the docks for $30, you know, something like $30 for a ton of poop. And they would send that out, and it would go out to the farmers around New York, and it would grow, and people would, you know, farm, and then it would go back, and the food would go back into the city. And, you know, that was a circular process, and a lot of the scientists that would talk about this would, you know, talk about how that idea was lost, because we flush it down the toilet and it smells bad, and, you know, and we think of it as having no value. So that I found very interesting.
Well, if only, there's got to be a point within the next 20 or 30 years where they figure out how to run cars and other things on dunk. I mean, it would be the most sensible thing to make pee and poop generate energy. It won't be the cleanest smelling energy, but, you know, if you could run windmills somewhere in Ethiopia on crap, that solves a whole lot of problems.
What was more interesting is that because of the aversion, people don't study. You know, there's not like a school of poop. I mean, if you could become a proctologist.
Well, all right. Well, but people do become proctologists or gynecologists. You know, you go spelunking down there. Sometimes it's like entering a fish market on a Saturday night, and yet people do it. I don't even know what that means. Anywho, we're talking with Aaron Feldman, who is the director of the movie Poop Talk, and which is going to be watchable by everybody on February 16th, just by going video on demand and all these different streaming. And since we have a lot of listeners in New York, especially, and some in California, besides Colorado, where are the physical spaces that people can see the movie, like in a theater?
So I know in New York we're going to be at the Lower East Side. We're in the Lower East Side. There's in the East Village Theater.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And we're going to be at the Lemley in Santa Monica in California.
Okay. Carl Lemley would be clattering over his grave. That's a guy who I think he directed or produced the first Phantom of the Opera movie with Lon Chaney. And now they're showing Poop Talk.
Wow, it's really come full circle.
Well, that's the shape of an anus anyway. But you know, what is the worst poop thing that ever happened to you?
All right.
We've all had the squirts. It's all happened. Come on.
I was in college, and I was having dry. So I've tried going to the bathroom. You know, this is part of my pathology for making this movie. And I was in the dorm. I didn't go to the bathroom for something like 7 days. It was quite painful. And anyway, I was coming back from class and walking down the hallway, and some of the other, you know, kids on the hall were coming past me, and they, as they were walking past, they kept on saying, "Tush, tush, tush, tush." And I'm like, "What do you mean, tush, tush?" And I keep on walking. I get to my room, and I see my roommate is standing by, and this will date me, he was playing the answering machine. And my mom left a message saying, "Air, go to the pharmacy and go get one of those things and put it in your tush."
Oh, my God. So, and of course, your roommate was playing this for everybody, like the suppository answering machine message?
So everyone knew me as Tush Tush, and literally, I think that was freshman year.
Oh!
Senior year, I remember sitting with, I forgot who, some girl, she turned to me, she was like, "You were the one who didn't go to the bathroom for..."
And, you know, in the movie, you've got these people who admit that, or they knew people who were so freaked out about pooping when they were children that they would, like, try not to eat, or they would calibrate how much they eat versus how much would come out.
Yeah, Kumail Nanjiani. It was hysterical. He actually, this is a true story, he would, and Pete Holmes tells the story about him, and then he confirms the story. It's fun to see, you know, all these guys talking about each other, too. So he thought that eating if you only eat the right amount, that the body would absorb that right amount and not leave anything. So he would try to eat, like, very little amounts, but he would still poop. He couldn't understand why.
And tell the story that Nick Schwartzman has about the two friends and the dog.
The two friends and it's my friend Jordan Rubin, who's good friends with the Sklars, and this is a long time ago. This was like 20 plus years. He lived in a giant loft in downtown in like Tribeca, and they were going to school at NYU, and Nick was there, and Jordan was taking a shower, and Nick was sick or something, and he had to go to the bathroom, and Jordan wouldn't get out of the shower, and so Nick just dropped his pants and saw a trash can, and, you know, in the kitchen, and tried to do his due, and then ended up missing the trash can and kicking it all over the floor, and just then, Jordan's still in the shower, and just then Jordan's dog noticed the chaos and came over and decided to have lunch. Jordan gets out of the shower and runs to the bathroom, and he's like, your dog shit.
And he got the guy in the shower to clean it up. That is the cruelest.
And Jordan ended up cleaning it up, and Nick would use that as a routine in his stand-up. He kept on using that and wouldn't tell and try. And it was like a running thing where he wouldn't tell Jordan for years.
All these stories and many, many more are in the movie Poop Talk, directed by our friend of the neighborhood, Aaron Feldman. So, of course, the question is, this movie, it's going to be on demand, and then you'll deal with getting it out there on places like Netflix and Amazon and other platforms, but you must be working on another movie as we speak. Are you?
I have another idea. Yeah, there's two. There's two. One's another documentary. It's called America. It's going to be the same premise. I mean, they go to actually outside of America, to comedy clubs outside of America, and talk with comedians, non-American comedians, and have them tell us their America joke.
Well, that's clever.
And then try and have a conversation about culture and what cultures think are, you know, funny and what's similarities and differences, and I think that'll be interesting.
Will it be just them telling jokes, or their actual life experiences, funny ones, perhaps anecdotes?
I like using the reason why I think this is different than, or I hope that the movie is different, is that they tell authentic stories, that it's not just their stand up.
Right. Yeah.
Meeting the comedians. So yeah, it would be really talking to the comedians and getting their perspective.
That was one project that is in the idea stage. What was the other?
It's a feature I'm doing it with my friends. It's called Machine Gun Chassid.
Machine Gun Chassid?
Yeah.
I am there on opening night. Oh my God. Is that what it sounds like? Is it like the Hebrew Hammer sort of thing?
I'm actually, my tone is going to be a little bit different. It's not as tongue-in-cheek.
You wouldn't want to talk about poop talk with tongue-in-cheek there, but okay, yeah.
I want to make it's going to be like a Western movie, except instead of a black hat cowboy, it's a black hatter.
Oh, boy! Now, when you say these are both in the ideation stage, as it were, how far along is each?
I'm in pre-production, and the Sklars are going to do the American movie with me again. So hopefully we'll do that in the spring. And then I am looking to shoot the other one in summer.
Do you have a day job, or do you write enough screenplays that get optioned and bought that's your living?
I used to, but the business has definitely changed as a screenwriter. So that's actually why I went and did this independent film. You know, I wanted to make something complete, because I would sell screenplays, but they wouldn't get made, and you could make a living and a good living. You need to have something made.
Well, yeah, everyone. So, but now you say the industry's changed. So, is it because you're a little older and it's harder? Everybody looks for the kids coming out of Yale and Harvard to write the next screenplay, or how has it changed?
I think that it's just the spec. There's no more spec market like it was. It's become more about television and more about the online, online distribution.
Sure.
And you don't see the $40 million thrillers anymore. Political thrillers. You have the large, mega brands, or these small independent films.
Oh, and so that whole middle—it's like the middle class of movies has been cut out.
Yeah.
But then let me ask you: how do you like when you do a movie like Poop Talk, which has a low budget? There's no budget in there for you to pay your mortgage and eat and live and stuff. So where does that come?
Oh, yeah.
From? Yeah.
No, so I would consult or shoot other videos and, always staying busy. I also teach screenwriting.
Ooh, where?
I do a myriad of things.
Where do you teach?
I teach, I'm a mentor at the LA Film and Radio, School of LA Film and Radio.
Far out, and okay.
Yeah.
What's the most important one or two, three things that you tell potential budding screenwriters, besides saying, please find another job because you're taking jobs away from me? So what else do you tell them?
No, I don't. You got to keep writing. You have to really have a thick skin for having everyone say no.
Oh, well, that's been always. But what about in terms of the actual structure or content of what they're writing? Do you see a lot of things say over and over again when you're looking at what they're submitting?
It's really difficult. There's only, everyone can sit and type and put down ideas, but the actual craft and to get the structure and why things work, that's the hard part. And you just have to do it over a long period of time.
It's kind of like poop.
I know that's not a wonderful answer, but
no,
really is no answer to the to how do you make it. You have to be good, and your script has to be good.
Yeah. But it's also telling so because. Kids, they think they write something, they revise it once, and they think it's perfect and beautiful, and how come they're not selling it for $1 million and famous already? When it's really about grinding out scripts like sausages for a decade, and then hopefully an agent looks at it, and then hopefully the agent brings it to somebody else, and you start getting paid work, That's it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And speaking of grinding things out like sausages, we're talking to the director of Poop Talk. Here in the neighborhood. It's been a delight talking to Aaron Feldman. I want to remind you that on February 16th, it's only that day? Is that the deal?
No, it'll be out for, it's going to be in theaters for at least a week.
Oh, okay.
And then on demand everywhere. And by everywhere, I mean Amazon and Google and iTunes and on your cable box, video on demand.
Well, I certainly recommend it. It's very funny. There's a... I almost don't want to... Let me just put it this way. It's worth watching the film just to hear the line involving a bagel. I think I was on the floor for about 10 minutes when I heard... I'm not going to give any more away, but it comes out of nowhere, and it's magnificent. So I want to lay that out there for people who want to see this movie and ask Aaron Feldman one more question. What is your favorite movie of all time and your favorite comedy of all time, if they're not the same?
It's a hard question, but I've got an interesting answer. Well, you know, I've got The Godfather, which just is there. But I love Dune by David Lynch.
Wow!
which was a bomb sci-fi movie in the 80s.
Yeah, no, I remember when it came out, and it was not liked by the critics, and it did not do well at the box office at all. So what is it? Well, you like the sandworms? What do you love so much about it?
I love the attention to detail of really creating a completely new world. I just thought he did that, and he puts 50% of his effort goes into the sound design, and I loved the world that he created. I thought it was, you know, between him and the Frank Herbert books, it was. I just thought it was really amazing, and I don't know, hit a chord with me, but I'm like one of the few.
But then again, his career has survived and thrived since. That movie bounced back, and people, you know, they go back and reappreciate an auteur director's works two or three decades later, and they say, oh, well, you know, now that it doesn't have to make $100 million at the box office to pay off, and now that we don't have just the local critics sitting down, seeing it once, and proclaiming it forever, you go back and you fit it into the legacy of a director overall. It has a very different take. And people can reappreciate it in a manner of speaking. Maybe.
That's a good, very good, yeah. Comedy, I grew up with Stripes.
Oh, sure, Ivan Reitman, right?
Film.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I can't get that out of my, you know, I can't get that out of my system.
That was a fun movie. It really was. You see that with a bunch of male friends, and you know, you just have a good, fun time. And it's Bill Murray, I mean, you know. You can't go wrong with Bill. Well, you can go wrong with Bill Murray, but not back then, you know.
It's just different. It's interesting to look back and see how different of a time. You know, I don't know if you could write a screenplay like that, or like a screenplay like Revenge of the Nerds, and.
Well, no. Why not? Why not?
Why not? I think in Revenge of the Nerds, there's like a rape scene.
Oh my God. I don't remember that. Really?
You know.
No, you don't remember that.
Guy has a mask, and he has sex with this pretty girl, you know, under false pretense. You know, there's things like that. There's different sensitivities today.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean. As opposed to the overall idea of nerds conquering the world, which will always be...
Yeah,
thematically, you're fine. I mean, and thematically, Stripes is a bunch of losers... get into the army and get whipped into shape in a comical way. I mean, Abbott and Costello did it, and then they can do it in Afghanistan 10 years from now. It's not, you know, I think those are workable ideas, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to
Absolutely.
Be, and you know what? Comedy filmmakers should not be overly sensitive. That kills comedy. You know, thank God for Sacha Baron Cohen and the South Park guys, and you for making a movie about poop.
I hope I did my little part.
Well, I hope you have a great big... Even if you're not number one at the box office, I hope you're number two, if you know what I'm saying. And I think you do. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to Aaron Feldman, the director of Poop Talk. It remains for me to say thank you so much for being with us in the neighborhood, and shalom to you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye now.